Welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with my co-host Doug Wells, and we have a stellar lineup today for you, including a Harvard professor who used to be vice chair of Goldman Sachs and wrote a fascinating book, a valuable book, and we will be talking to him about that first, and then the sure thing at the end of the year.
Not, the IRS.
Not death, but taxes.
Taxes, exactly. And before we transition to our second guest, just you do want to stay tuned. The book is What You're Really Meant to Do. I read it over the weekend, and I'm going to be giving it out to some friends as a Christmas gift. So it's definitely an interview you want to hear.
I'm very impressed.
It's wise advice, and that's hard to find. Our second guest, as Larry mentioned, is going to be Bill Brunson of the IRS. We have him in a couple times each year. He's going to talk to us about some tax-saving tips for the end of the year, which is rapidly approaching, and then talk about some lesser-known aspects of the IRS that I think people will find interesting, as well as the auctions and clearinghouses that the IRS runs online. I'm interested to find out about that. Maybe see if you can get a BMW for
$12.
For $12, exactly. And our final guest here in studio is going to be Sarah Baldwin. She is the co-owner of Park City Sports, which is a ski and snowboard rental shop. They have a new location on Lower Main, and we're going to talk to Sarah about what she's seeing in business and what kind of season she's looking forward to. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Katie Noble with the Peterson Calder Real Estate Group at Prudential and longtime KPCW volunteer and supporter. With a background in real estate law and investment property, I have the expertise to help you understand the real estate market and help you sell or buy your Park City home. For more information, experienceparkcity.com or Katie at experienceparkcity.com.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And we're pleased to have on the line with us now Robert Stephen Kaplan, the author of What You're Really Meant to Do, A Roadmap for Reaching Your Unique Potential. And Rob is a senior associate dean and a professor of management practice in business administration at Harvard Business School. He's also co-chairman of the Draper Richards Kaplan Foundation, which is a global venture philanthropy firm, and chairman founding partner of Indaba Capital Management, and that's just the latest things he's done. He's also been vice chairman of the Goldman Sachs Group. Rob, welcome to Mountain Money this morning.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I see you're calling in from San Francisco rather than Boston, but
I am. I'm missing all the activities, I guess, at Harvard this morning. But yeah, we have a big meeting with all our grantees at Draper Richards Kaplan here in San Francisco today. So that's why I'm here.
Well, very fine. Looking at your book, is this meant as a kind of find yourself, find your career book for young people, just young people?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This is my second book. The first one is called What to Ask the Person in the Mirror, which is a little bit more about strategy. But the premise of this book, I've been working now for 30 years trying to coach people, help people reach their potential. And then I've been doing it in much greater emphasis since I've been at Harvard the last 7 years. And what I found is whether you're 15, 25, 45, 65, 85, at every level of your life, people are still trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do next? What am I supposed to do now? How can I be valuable? How can I make an impact? How can I make the most of my life? And so after so many of these conversations, I thought, you know, I should write a book on this because I've learned so much. And I've realized, and maybe this is the most valuable thing, if you're listening to this program and you're struggling with it, you're not the only one. Almost everyone I meet is. They may not wear it on their sleeve, but this is a common problem.
Well, you must have had that conversation with yourself to make a mid-career transition from vice chair of Goldman to Harvard business professor.
Yes. So that's in the category of crazy. It really is. And everybody thought I was a little crazy to do that. But I felt like, okay, I've done this career. All my friends, family, loved ones, everybody I knew thought, boy, you've got it made now. And I just felt like I could make a greater impact maybe doing something else. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I had an instinct. And it took me several years to get up the courage to follow that instinct. But I now, after having done this, I realize I can have a much greater impact in the world. And I love my career at Goldman, but I love what I've been doing at Harvard. And so it's hard to turn the page, though, very hard.
So, Rob, let's talk about these inflection points, because careers are kind of a funny thing, right? You go through life, you're in high school, you kind of know what the rules are, you do as best you can, you get into a good school. Again, you know what the rules are, it's kind of black and white. You know, Right. Get good grades and you're likely going to get opportunities. And your first couple jobs out of your career are kind of the same, right? It's really task-oriented, do the task very well. And then you come to these inflection points. You're talking about one later in your career. You know, your first inflection point usually comes a couple years after you've worked, you've done your task well, and now it's time for the next promotion. And it's at these inflection points that I see people that have been gracefully moving through their career and succeeding start to stumble. And you talk about a few of these inflection points in your book, which I really enjoyed reading. One of which was a young lady who really wanted to run a business in Latin America, and somebody else in her firm got that promotion instead of her, and she was floored. She was offended. But your advice there and the counsel you gave her, A, was very successful, but B, was very wise, and I wanted you to just kind of share that story with the audience.
So that's an interesting story. And you're right, this book is all about inflection points at every point in your life. Figuring out what you believe, what are your strengths and weaknesses, what do you have a passion for, and then acting on it. That's the hard one, acting on it. And this woman was actually at a company. She was happy at the company. She wanted a big job in Latin America. The only problem was, she thought the company knew that, and she realized in hindsight she hadn't spoken up, she hadn't articulated it, and they actually didn't know it at all. So they picked somebody else for the job, didn't even think to ask her, and she was really upset. And she came to me because she was thinking about quitting, and I took her through every step up to this point, and we talked about the fact, if she wanted this so much, why didn't she speak up before? And she said, well, I didn't want to make waves, I thought they knew, all that stuff. Truth is, she just didn't act, and what she realized is, if you really think you want something and you have conviction about something, your people who work with you are not psychic. You actually have to take ownership of it and speak up. And she finally did, and she wound up getting what she wanted because people at the company liked her. But now that they knew what she wanted, they helped her get there.
You know, one thing you talk about is the skills you bring to the table in any career you decide to choose, and skills you don't have, your deficiencies. And
right.
And one piece of advice you have is to, well, don't try to fix those deficiencies if there are things you aren't good at because you don't like them at all.
Right. So that's the problem. First of all, most people I work with in their careers are not fully aware of their strengths and weaknesses, or they think it's not cool to admit you have a weakness. And what I think, and I talk to give advice, is what's not cool is being unaware of your weaknesses. And because all of us, sadly, have them. A lot of people think, oh, these people who succeed, they just are great at everything. Well, they're not. But what they do is they're aware of their strengths and weaknesses. And then, yes, some weaknesses you can improve on, so fine. But you have to make a judgment. Some you're not going to improve on. If you're not quantitative, for example, or you hate a task, as you said, that's probably not something. You might be better off accepting it and then surround yourself with people who have complementary skills, or define your job in a way that you can play to your strengths. But my biggest concern with people out there is they actually just aren't even aware of their strengths and weaknesses, or they're in a job or where they just think they have to convince themselves, I have to be good at this whether I like it or not, because everybody around me is good at it, so I have to be good at it. And that's usually a mistake or a detour.
Well, let's talk about another inflection point in another case example that you give, which is the individual that was a strong producer for his firm. His vision of himself was he wanted to be a unit leader, but yet he kept being passed over for that position. And I think it relates to your good to great chapter. You know, what does it take to go from good to great for people in their careers?
Yeah, and so this is good to great to me means you act like an owner. Sometimes somebody's a great salesperson or a great producer or a great something, and they've got the weird idea in their head that they should only do things in their job that are enhance their ability to perform that job. They look at their job very narrowly. My experience and advice to people is you want to be a leader in your firm and get promoted to bigger jobs, you got to act like an owner first, which is a mindset, which means if there's something that's outside your job but you can help someone else, do it. And that's about character. That's about ownership. The story you're referring to in this book is the guy's a big producer, and now he's getting sick of just being a producer, and he wants to now get promoted to a leadership management job, and nobody in the firm wants to promote him, even though they like him in what he does, because he's never demonstrated that he cares about recruiting and coaching and developing people and helping others. And so what I say to people, if you want to go from good to great, act like an owner. Act like you own the place and define your job broadly and think about the next level up and people around you and how to make the place better. And if you do, good things will come your way. And I've seen that over and over and over again.
You know, and that's a good example, you know, act like an owner. And part of that I really liked in your book, you talk about the importance of coaching young people. That takes a lot of time, and the challenge is oftentimes, Larry, you don't get credit for doing that, right? The other
right.
person gets the credit
because they're moving up. The other person rises, yeah.
But it's those types of things, I think, in this executive's case that his peers were looking for, his seniors were looking for, to say, if you want to run a unit, you've got to be able to recruit, you've got to be able to coach. I think it's important. Let's talk about some of the emotional inflection points people have in their career. You know, the example of the woman that wanted to run a business unit in South America, initially she felt like she was betrayed, right? But
right.
ultimately, really, it wasn't. It was really a responsibility of hers to communicate upwardly to her bosses to let them know what she wanted. You
right.
know, the challenge as you get older is sometimes you really do get betrayed by folks on your team.
Yes.
And I have found that, as unfortunately some of my friends have gone through this, that is one of the toughest emotions to get over. What advice do you have for folks that feel like, you know, they put in 10, 15, 20 years with a company and they feel they've been betrayed, and you know what, actually they probably were. How do they get past that?
Well, so here's the one little exercise. Sometimes an exercise is a good thing, and I do this with a lot of executives, even though it sounds touchy-feely. And I used to do this when I was at Goldman Sachs. Think of a time when an injustice has been done to you. Everybody, if you're around long enough, feel like you've been treated unfairly at some point. And by the way, I say to people, if you don't feel that way yet, just wait. You will. It always happens. The issue then is to not jump to act. Like you didn't get promoted or something. You know, you feel betrayed. So the question is, why did the injustice happen? What was your role in it, if any? And reflect on it for a week or two before you take out your gun and shoot. And then you got to step back to basics. Okay, I didn't get promoted. Do I still love the firm? Do I still love my job? Are they good people? Why, you know, is there a role I played in this? And anger is a big issue, and that a lot of people, you know, their anger gets the best of them, and they can't help themselves. They're so mad that they can't take the time to reflect. And I think the biggest person I say in the book, and I believe this, who will derail your career is you. No one's going to actually derail you. You're going to derail you. And most career wounds often are self-inflicted. And all I'm trying to get people to do is, and including me, this is the reason I came up with this, is I had to do it for myself.
I'm in the studio shaking my head up and down as well, agreeing with you.
Yeah, count to 10 first before you go off like a rocket. And you'll almost always be glad. There's always time to blow your top or to self-destruct, as I get around it. There's always time to self-destruct. Just give yourself a little time. But that means you got to calm yourself down. And every person has a different fuse length. You got to learn to calm yourself down and reflect. You're going to make a better judgment. But you got to just try to do that.
But that is the trap for a lot of career people, isn't it? That you get 15, 20 years invested in a company and you don't get the promotion you knew you deserved. And start resenting the company you work for, but now you're 40 and have kids at home and the mortgage and the lake cabin and fancy cars, and you're just kind
of... And you realize you never really loved the job that much anyhow, so you feel like I made all these sacrifices and I could have done something else, and then you start feeling lousy.
And then you're regret. But you're kind of trapped at that point. You've got all these obligations.
That's right. So on this one, first of all, I was having dinner with a group last night here in San Francisco, and we were talking about this. The first piece of advice for everybody listening is, and it's easy to say, but at every level, if you can is the key words, save your money. You don't have to have a fancy car, fancy house, all that stuff. Saving your money, my experience is, and I learned this from my parents, because we're always felt like on the verge of disaster. My dad was a traveling salesman and worked on a draw against commission. So we were taught save, because you never know when things are going to go off the rails. But what that does is, in these periods when you feel like I'm trapped, you may not be as trapped as you think, unless you have huge bills to pay, and then maybe you're right, you are trapped. So that's number one. Now, some people don't have a choice, but a lot of people listening do have a choice, and be careful about how you spend your money. But the second thing is, listen, most careers, only a very select people become CEO, and frankly, I've dealt with a lot of retired CEOs who feel betrayed after they retired because the silence is deafening.
Sure.
Everybody deals with this where I'm not wanted, I'm not loved, I'm not needed. And so the biggest issue I've encouraged people to do is you can't stop. Strengths and weaknesses, what's your passions? And this is why I always say to people, pick one or two things to do outside your professional job. Help in the community, teach at a school, give to others, be on a board of some nonprofit. You will get far more from it than you give, and you'll learn about yourself, and you'll realize that your life is not, you're not a hostage to your job or your career. You can do other things. But many people say, I'm just going to put everything into the job, and they feel trapped.
It's a great point. When you're CEO, it seems like you have a lot of friends. And then you transition, and all of a sudden, where did those friends go? A lot of them
who am
were
I gonna
friends
golf with?
From business aspects. We had Maynard Webb on the show earlier this year, and Rob, you probably know him. He's the chairman of the board of Yahoo. And he talked about a person that was very influential in his life, a very caring, warm CEO. I forget the gentleman's name, but... Maynard asked him, boy, you spend a lot of time that you probably don't have to. And this guy's framework was he wanted to live his life in such a way that when he was retired and sitting on a park bench, when he ran into business associates or colleagues he used to work with, they would want to come when he's retired and old, sit on the bench and catch up and talk with him. And I think that's a nice framework.
That's what everybody wants.
But we forget it sometimes in the moment.
Yeah, here's the thing I think that's a great aspiration. The thing that I think is very disappointing to people is for some, they feel like I did everything to help others, and I'm sitting on the park bench, and it's not that people don't want to talk to me, but they are always too busy to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like nobody wants me, needs my advice. And for that person, I talk to a lot of those people, the 70, 75-year-old retired CEO. Again, I'd say same framework when you're 25. What are your strengths and weaknesses? You've got tremendous strengths. What are your passions? Is there not something in the world where you could step up and volunteer your time or your efforts and make an impact? And I will tell you, I say it half-kiddingly, reaching your potential and doing the process in this book is like getting in shape or losing weight. it's not something that stops when you're 53. You know, you're always trying to get in shape, and you're always trying to watch your weight, and you never arrive. And so my advice is keep getting good habits, because when you're 75, even if you've done everything perfectly, if you stop doing the things in this book and these processes that you needed to do when you're 45 or 35, you will ultimately feel like you're not reaching your potential and you're not making an impact. Everybody, I haven't met anybody yet at any age who doesn't want to make an impact, who doesn't want their opinion to be valued, but you got to take ownership of doing that yourself. You can't wait for it. You can't sit and wait for somebody to come to you. You got to take ownership.
What about the world of careers today? When you started, it was climb the ranks at Goldman Sachs, and you stay there 20 years. A lot of people 30, 40 years, and now we read young. People starting out are going to have 5, 7, 12 different careers in the course of their working life. Does that change the equation at all on how you find your purpose in life?
Well, it means to me that, and I'll speak for myself, a lot of the things I talk about in this book, if I had been mediocre at, I still would have done fine. Because the economy was, I didn't know it was going to boom, and I didn't know the stock market was going to boom. But when I think back to the early 80s, you know, we've gone through an incredible run here globally of economic prosperity. The people graduating today who are listening to this, it's, in my opinion, it's going to be tougher. We're not going to boom the way we did. They're going to get more likely to get fired. They're more likely to have to fire people. It's going to be harder. And so all the habits in this book, strengths and weaknesses, self-awareness, getting coaching, understand your passions, understand your own life story, all these steps are more critical because you're going to go through more trauma than I did. You're going to go through more disappointment, and mainly because the pie is not growing the way it was. And, you know, you could do everything perfectly, but if you compete with Apple and they come out with a new product, you know, you could be badly damaged, even though you've done everything right. And so, all I'd say to people is, focus on the blocking and tackling of this because it is harder. You're more likely to change jobs, and changing jobs is stressful. I've only had two basic jobs in my whole life: Goldman Sachs and Harvard Business School, and that was enough. And I had lots of jobs within those two organizations. But changing jobs is stressful, and you're going to have to get in better shape, in my opinion, to deal with it now than even the shape I had to be in.
You know, it's much more stressful than people think, and I try to tell people to prepare for that. But no matter how much you prepare, it's still going to be difficult to go through because you get so much of your sense of worth, especially as you get older, from your job, and when that's gone, boy, it's tough. Rob, we've only got time for a few more questions, and I want to make sure we have a chance to talk about ethics and values. You know, we talk right about building our careers and inflection points, and there's a lot of things in your career you can recover from, right? You miss your sales quota 1 year. Maybe you lose your job over that, right?
Yes.
You can still recover from that. You make an ethical mistake, you do something, you know, that other people look at and say, wow, that was really bad. That has long-lasting damaging impacts on your career, and I wanted you to share with our audience your views on that aspect, and particularly why it's important to write down your ethics and your values and think about them ahead of time.
Yes, so I talk a lot about, to your point, values and boundaries. You know, what are your values, but in particular, what are your ethical boundaries? I will not lie, cheat, steal, whatever it is. Everybody, I hate to break it to the audience, goes through periods where you eat, despite your best intentions, you can still cross a boundary. You say, I will never lie, and then I ask a group of people, how many of you have lied? And everybody raises their hand. So why did you do that? And so you've got to understand yourself, what creates pressure for you, what stresses you out, what would make you cross a boundary? You know, maybe it's the health or welfare of your family, maybe your ambition might make you cross a boundary. Maybe it's fear of loss of job. Maybe it's being embarrassed, looking stupid admitting you don't know might get you to cross a boundary, but you have to be aware of it. And on the other hand, the most important thing I encourage people to do is, in every day and every way in your job, you got to think about, how do I add value? How do I add value in a way that's distinctive? And don't lose sight of that. Now, a lot of people make ethical mistakes because they stop thinking about how to serve a client or a community, and they start thinking about how to make money. And once you do that, unfortunately, my previous industry, this is part of what happened. They lost track of how to serve someone else. Instead, it became about how to make money. When that happens, you're in trouble. You're not far away from making a mistake, because you can justify lots of things in the name of making money.
And Rob, our final question, you just mentioned about thinking about how you add value. I want to give you a chance to talk about, and I think it's a really important point in your book, especially for young people, thinking about what are the top three tasks you need to do to succeed in your job. It seems so basic, but it's very important.
Yes. So I encourage everybody in the job you're in, first question, how do you add value that's distinctive? Whether you're a doctor, you're a teacher, whatever you do, what do you do that at? And then the question is, what are the two or three things you need to be great at to add that value? And I in every job out there, there's an answer to that question, or you can strive to answer that question. And this is why you see so many people who are in jobs who are spending their time on things that seem that are unrelated to how they really add value, and because they haven't sat down and really bored in on what are the two or three things you need to be, have a great radio show or to be a great teacher, to great anything. And I encourage people, think that through. Aim before you shoot. You're working around the clock. Make sure you're focusing a disproportionate amount of your time on the two or three things that are going to be most critical to adding value. And then that should drive your skill development also. Your assessment of your strengths and weaknesses and your passions should be matched against those two or three tasks.
Rob, great advice this morning. We thank you for joining us. Our guest is Robert Stephen Kaplan. He's the ex-vice chair of Goldman Sachs, current professor at Harvard Business School. His new book is What You're Really Meant to Do. I'm going to be giving it out as gifts to a couple of my business friends and young people that I coach. I really enjoyed reading it this weekend, and I truly enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Rob. Now, looking to the weather, I think we've broken the cold spell, Doug.
Boy, it was balmy out there, almost 30 degrees this weekend.
Yeah, and we're going to hit the 40s most of the week.
Nice.
41 today, 42 tomorrow, 41 the next day, and then by Thursday, expecting snow, about a 60% chance. So, in a ski town, that's great news, and we will be back to talk with the tax man after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Chris Robinson with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we've been supporting KPCW since day one. Prudential Utah helps buyers and sellers with their home needs, whether it's a condo, single-family house, or undeveloped land. Our agents know our community and our local market. More information can be found at pru-utah.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Boy, Larry, I really enjoyed that conversation. That was some wise advice, and that's hard to find.
I hope listeners appreciate how hard we work, especially Beth Fratkin, in lining up our guests. That was the former vice chairman of Goldman Sachs, and obviously
cool.
A pretty brilliant guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our next guest is Bill Brunson. He's with the IRS. And Bill, welcome to Mound Money.
Larry, Doug, thanks for having Internal Revenue Service on KPCW.
Absolutely. And it is, December 16th, I believe, if my math is correct?
Yes, and that means we are down to two weeks
in
of
a day.
2013.
And Bill, we've got you on not only to talk about some tax-saving tips, but I want to make sure we save time to talk about these IRS auctions at the end. But let's start with some tax-saving tips. What are some things people should be thinking about in these last 2 weeks?
Well, a primary one that comes to mind is that if you're able to itemize, and that's use the Schedule A Form 1040, you can make a charitable contribution, whether it's cash or non-cash. You have to do this before the end of the year, of course, and you have to gift to a qualified public charity. And with anything with taxes, you should keep a paper trail, good records. So you can make a non-cash contribution, such as clothing or household items, that must be in good use condition or better to be deductible. One thing that I always found interesting was that if you gift cash by credit card and these donations, you know, hit on your 2013 charge, but you pay them off in 2014, you can still claim it for the 2013 year. So you can go ahead and max out on your credit card in 2013 and claim it on the 2013 year and pay it off in 2014.
You know, before we leave that point, I've always wondered, how do you value used donations? I mean, I could take a couple of garbage bags full of old sweaters that I wouldn't be caught dead wearing. How can I value that?
Well, I made the earlier statement that it must be in good used condition.
Okay, well, let's assume they're just ugly, but they're in good condition.
That's in the viewer's eyes. But you're talking about the fair market value of the item donated to be able to claim the correct amount on the return when you file it. And you can go to these charitable organization outlets such as Goodwill or Salvation Army where they sell these things already and see how they are priced currently and then base that value on that cost that is being charged by that particular outlet. That is an acceptable method.
You do want to be careful, though, because you'd hate to get an audit because, you know, you said your sweaters were worth $100 each and maybe they should have been worth $5 or $10. That would be a very painful experience to go through. So be careful, be conservative. Bill, I want to mention something that I don't think a lot of our listeners have heard of, but it's a very powerful tool. Charitable giving at the end of the year is a good thing to be doing, but a lot of people are like, I'm not sure who I want this money to go to. And there's something called donor-advised funds. The big custodian, Schwab Fidelity, has it. But more importantly, the local community foundations like the Park City Community Foundation and the Utah Community Foundation have these donor-advised funds. You can make the donation now, but you can decide ultimately who that money goes to later. And that can be really powerful.
Oh, so you can let it grow.
You can let it grow. You can wait 10 years. You get the donation in the tax year you make it. You want to talk to your accountant. I'm not a CPA. I'm not an accountant. But that's the way some of our clients have used donor advised funds. And my wife and I have one. And we really like it because we can put in the money. You know, maybe we wanted to give more money than ultimately ended up happening for the year. We can put it in a donor advised fund and we can decide when we have time how we want to spend that money.
That's something that the individual needs to make sure that, as what you said, all the rules and regulations are met so that it comes out exactly as you want it to be.
If you had a pretty good year and maybe you're in some kind of job where you can see next year's not going to look so good, can you load up on your deductions, like prepay your mortgage a couple of months or something?
You can do that with your mortgage, or if you're going to get a bonus at the year's end, you can defer it into the next year. But keep in mind, you're deferring or delaying the tax issue. You're not alleviating it. So if you want to increase the mortgage interest being paid in 1 year, that's fine. Or if you want to delay, say, receiving monies and postpone it to next year, if the boss will do that and pay that money to you, when it's constructively received is when you would take the into account for tax purposes. So if they delay the bonus into 2014, it's not going to show up on your 2013 year, and it's still there for the Christmas season, in essence. But all you're doing is postponing that financial issue until the subsequent year. Another thing that folks should look out for, consider, not look out for, would be retirement account contributions. You still have that 2 weeks left to max out on any retirement accounts. And if you are a IRA contributor, you can contribute up to $5,500 per individual or $6,500 if age 50 or older. If you are involved with a defined contribution such as a 401k or defined benefit, such as a 403B, then you can contribute a maximum of $17,500, or if you're 50 or older, $23,000. Probably the biggest thing, Larry and Doug, that a person can do with their taxes is to keep accurate records. It's a good reminder at tax time. These good records will make sure that you take full advantage of any credit, deduction, or allowable expense that you qualify for. And the bottom line is they don't cost anything. You can keep good records at no cost, and it's well worth the time involved. The better records you have will ensure that you only pay the correct amount of tax, no more, no less.
Yeah, it's never fun to save those records, but they're very important. You know, Bill, as I hear you talk about the increases that are available for people that are over 50, hard to believe, but next year I'm going to quit. The good news, bad news is next year I qualify for those. Bill, we've got Park City's a town that has a lot of small and mid-sized businesses, and I know that the IRS and the government has kind of partnered with various organizations trying to make it a little easier for our returning vets to find jobs, and there is a tax credit that people should be aware of. Can you talk to our audience about that, please?
There are several different types of business credits available, and currently there is a work opportunity tax credit available to employers who hire qualified vets on or before the end of the year. The qualified vet determination has multiple factors, and that is outlined on IRS.gov, and there's also an additional form that the employer needs to file with the state workforce agency and ask for specific items. So if you are able to hire a qualified vet before the end of the year, you could have a maximum tax credit of $9,600 for a for-profit entity. If you are a tax-exempt employer, then that would be $6,240.
And, Bill, it's important for people to know that's a tax credit, not a tax deduction. You and I know the difference, but can you share with our audience the differences?
A tax credit can go dollar for dollar against assessed tax. So your credits are the ones that are the best in my mind. A deduction would just reduce the overall taxable amount that could be subject to tax. But a credit goes against assessed tax dollar for dollar. So if you have $9,600 of tax due Uncle Sam and you qualify for this work opportunity credit for hiring a vet, you're going to zero out. Now, if you had $100,000 of income and you had a deduction worth $9,600, you're still going to have about, $91,600 worth of taxable income that's subject to the tax table. So a credit goes dollar for dollar against assessed tax.
Okay, now here's another credit that I don't quite understand, and that's the IRS Savers Credit for low and moderate income workers.
That allows an individual who doesn't make a lot of money, low to moderate income, $59,000 or less, who's in the workforce and contributing currently to a pension fund at work, to receive a credit from Uncle Sam on their taxes up to $2,000. So they're already in a situation where they're not making a lot of money, they're contributing to their pension fund, and now they can get an additional $2,000 credit because of their circumstances. The $59,000 amount is the maximum amount based on the marital status. So there's going to be less income, there's going to be different factors for people in different marital statuses. So you would want to go to IRS.gov and key in Savers Credit in the search engine to find out, depending upon your marital status, what the maximum amount is that you can earn in that year. And then the form will also do the same thing for you, too, if you work the numbers through the form.
Bill, I've got a press release you sent to the radio station a few days ago that talks about volunteers being needed to help man the community tax help sites.
Right.
I didn't realize that those were volunteers, and if folks are interested, tell us a little bit more about that program.
In 1969, Congress mandated to the Internal Revenue Service, due to the complexity of the tax code back in 1969, folks, it was complex. And just think about it today. But that the Internal Revenue Service needed to assist the general public in preparing their tax returns. Now, does that mean that the Internal Revenue Service is going to become a tax preparer? No. What we've done is work with one particular group, and then it morphed into another particular group. So you have two groups currently, AARP's Tax Counseling for the Elderly, and Volunteer Tax Assistance Programs that provide free tax assistance to individuals within the community during the filing season. Now, there are a few sites and a few select areas that are year-round, but for the most part, these sites open up 1st of February and prepare tax returns, both federal and state returns, for individuals who are elderly, English is a second language, maybe they're disabled, maybe they don't have the wherewithal, but they will prepare the tax return for the current year and file it electronically. And they can help folks that may qualify for a refundable credit, such as the Earned Income Tax Credit, get that particular item. But like any volunteer organization, we need volunteers. And so right now, the Internal Revenue Service and these service organizations are recruiting volunteers to be trained in tax law and then go to these sites when they open up in the early spring. The contractual agreement is that if you do decide to take the training, that you will volunteer for 2 or 3 hours a week at one of these sites. Is it mandatory? No. We'll train you in the tax law, and if you walk on down the road, that's fine. But we do ask that you do volunteer for these sites if you take it. If you are to prepare tax returns at one of these sites, you're going to be tested. If you don't pass the test, they can still use you. They need meters and greeters. They need people to help the workflow through. They've got computers that they set up with printers, and there's always issues with the hardware. So there's always something for somebody to do, whether or not they prepare taxes at one of these sites, and we could sure use people to volunteer for this program. And to find out more about it, just call the IRS toll-free, 1-800-829-1040, 1-800-829-1040. I've done this in the past when I first started with the IRS back in the mid-80s, and it was something where it was an eye-opener. I'd never known that this program existed, and it gives you a chance to put something back into the community.
That sounds good. Thank you, Bill. Always enjoyable speaking with you. I teased the audience at the beginning of the show that we were going to talk about the auction sites. We're going to save that conversation for another time. We always enjoy having you in. I hope you don't mind. We call you Bill the Tax Man. Our guest is Bill Brunson with the IRS. Bill, always a pleasure to talk.
Doug is angling to buy a $12 Mercedes at an IRS auction.
We'll have that conversation in 2014. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Larry, Doug, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on KPCW.
Thank you. And our next guest is going to be Sarah Baldwin. She's the co-owner of Park City Sports, which is a ski and snowboard rental shop. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a minute.
Park City Realty Group is proud to support KPCW. Park City Realty Group has provided real estate services to buyers and sellers since 2005. Our team shares local knowledge and insight with clients who value the Park City lifestyle. Knowledge plus hard work equals success. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our guest in the studio with us now is Sarah Baldwin. She's the co-owner of Park City Sports, Ski and Snowboard Rentals. Welcome to Mountain Money. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you've got a new location on Lower Main Street. You're going to be renting skis and snowboards and related equipment. I understand you can actually rent ski pants and gear like that.
Yep.
We're at the very start of the season. Next weekend's going to start to get really, really busy. Do you have any visibility into what the season is looking like?
So far it looks good. It started picking up a lot this week. We're having really good feedback from the hotels, hearing that the occupancy is pretty solid. So hopefully it's going to be a really good season.
We had somebody in from the tourist organization that said that bookings are up 20-25% over last year, just in general for the whole season, which sounds phenomenal.
It's going to be a strong winter, and And it's amazing how much snowmaking has covered so many runs that the skiing is as good as it is, although there is a 60% chance of snow by Thursday. So this is not your first location. Where are you now, and how many years have you been there?
Well, my partners, they have three locations. They're at Park City Mountain Resort, so that's Dean and Jamie Peters, and they have Park City Sports, Slopeside Sports, and Jake's Ski and Snowboard Rentals.
PCMR. I've seen all of them. Now, let me ask you, why not just have one common brand?
Well, that was kind of the start of that with this new shop. Having three stores at the base of PCMR makes it made more sense to have three names.
Different names. Okay, fair enough.
But, yeah, with this store, it definitely made sense to continue the brand and strengthen the brand.
You know, one of the things I was glad to see you offer is rentals of jackets and ski pants. I have friends that will visit from warm places, California or Florida, and they'll ask me, hey, do you have an extra pair of ski pants? No, I don't have an extra. But there's really very few places that they can rent ski pants, and, you know, they have to pay a couple hundred bucks to get a decent set of ski pants and even more for a jacket. Why do you think there's so few shops that rent soft goods?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. With our stores, we're definitely very sensitive to that fact that there are a lot of people who are coming into town and don't want to spend a ton of money to try it or to just go up for one day with their friends. Right. So, you know, we carry the $28 goggle or the, you know, the $20 glove.
So it's a mystery to me, and it sounds like it's a mystery to you. You're doing it, and it makes sense for you as a business. But
mm-hmm.
And from your standpoint, it's probably a good thing that other businesses aren't renting soft goods.
We're okay with that.
Now, your rental fleet, some shops specialize in one brand.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you specialize in every brand.
You know, for—
And isn't that— I mean, that's a lot of money to have tied up in inventory of seven different brands in every size.
Yeah, you know, for the stores that Dean and Jamie have at PCMR, they do have quite a few brands, both skis and boots. With the Main Street store, we have a much stronger focus on Salomon, more of at Main Street, we're mostly focused on Salomon and doing a stronger brand play there. But with the other stores, that variety, I think, really helps a lot to have all of the different brands. And we can pull those down to Main Street if somebody wants a Dinastar or they want a Rossignol ski. We can pull those and take them down to Main Street.
And then the other thing, you know, is before I lived here, Larry, my wife and I and my parents and I and my brother and sister would go on ski vacations. And it was always fun. But the hassle factor is always high. No matter what you do, it's just a high hassle factor sport to get to the hill. And one of the things I saw in our press release talking about your business is you offer overnight storage on slope, which is really helps quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a service that we're very, very happy to offer to people. And I think it helps our business tremendously that we have that available.
As a parent, you know, it's bad enough lugging your own stuff around, but when you gotta lug around your kids' stuff, that's a service that before my kids could lug their own stuff, that was a service that would make a difference between a place I would do business with and would not.
Yeah. One last question. What do you do in the summertime? If you've got a storefront, you got to lease it all year, I presume.
Yep.
So what do you do to bring money in the summertime, or do you just go play?
Wouldn't that be nice? So in the summer, we're going to be doing bikes and also hike and run. And, of course, mountain biking and biking in general keeps picking up in this area. So that's going to be really fun for us to get into and be a part of.
Because, you know, as expensive as skiing can be for the gear, skis are cheap in comparison to mountain biking.
I'm pretty stunned when I see $6,000 bikes.
I've bought cars that cost less than mountain bikes that I'd like to own. So, our guest this morning is Sarah Baldwin. She's the co-owner of Park City Sports. Her new location is at the Town Lift in Lower Main Street. Sarah, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Three very interesting conversations. Again, really enjoyed Rob Kaplan, former vice chairman at Goldman Sachs.
Boy, and his book has the Doug Wells seal of major approval.
I don't think I've mentioned. There's a couple books that I've bought, you know, here or there, but this will be one that I probably have hand out a half dozen copies of. It was really good. It was good advice. Larry, I want to switch gears. One of the things over the weekend, you sent me a copy from the Deseret News of an ad that you looked at, and it falls under the category, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Tell our audience what this is.
Well, this just annoys me, angers me, that reputable newspapers, USA Today, the Salt Lake Tribune, Deseret News, run these ads, and this is a company that's under investigation in many states. It's banned from business in many states. And they have, it looks very much like a big newspaper article. And the headline across all columns, public gets free U.S.-issued silver dollars. Hotlines to ring off the hook as callers rush to claim valuable century-old silver dollars before the 48-hour order deadline ends. Well, we're past 48 hours, but I bet you one of these silver dollars that you could still get them on the line and get an ad in.
I suspect you're right.
And here's the deal. You get a free U.S. silver dollar, but the free one is packaged in what they call a vault brick, which I think is probably a cardboard box. And it's a nice cardboard box, but it's a but so anyway, you get the free silver dollar inside that box, but there are three silver dollars in that box, and you have to pay $99 each for the other two, or divide $198 by three, and that's what you're paying.
And Larry, you did some sleuthing and figured out what the market value of one of those silver dollars is.
Well, these are the headlines talk about how these are valuable century-old silver dollars. Well, they made a lot of them a century ago, and they're worth about $20 each. So
so you could buy three of them for $60 instead of they're asking for $138 for it?
$198. And that's just for the two, because the third, of course, you get free.
You get free.
But if you buy the other two.
So if this is the worst financial mistake you make, you're still okay as long as you only buy one vault. But it does remind you, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Well, you know, exactly right. And this one is, it's done with pictures of vault bricks and an assembly line where they're piling up the bricks, and a very serious-looking armed guard displaying the box that has the free one
in it. You've been in journalism a long time. Do you think 20 years ago, when newspapers were in their heydays and profitable, do you think something like this would have made it into the paper?
Well, I think it's more likely that it lands in papers now. But
because the papers are struggling.
Yeah, you know, it's like the Amish mantle fireplaces. Now, that's a legitimate product, but the way they portray them in newspaper ads is limited time. If you're in the mountain time zone, call between 2 and 4, and these are going fast. And believe me, there will always be enough to sell if you call. If you call, you're absolutely going to get one. So it's just kind of silly. And not a good investment at all. Hey, I want to remind you, tomorrow on Chris and Nell will be talking with Doug Evans from Mountain Regional Water about their energy conservation program. And there's some new news about the XL Pipeline, and that'll be on This Green Earth tomorrow. And I want to thank our great guests, Rob Kaplan, Bill Brunson, and Sarah Baldwin this morning, and also our sponsors, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate, and San Francisco Design.